Welcome, everybody, to episode number 94 of Underserved. Today, we are featuring Steve Plank, CTO of Taco Bell. Let's get started.
Welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry, where we focus on stories of tech industry leaders, their insights, and their lessons learned. And now, your host, Andrew Jalina.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us today on Underserved.
Hey, Andrew, I appreciate you having me on. Had an opportunity to listen to quite a few of your podcasts, so excited to get an opportunity to tell my story.
Excellent. Not just a guest, also a fan.
There you go.
So way back in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, what was it like growing up there? Much technology going on or anything like that?
Yeah, I was born in Bucks County, just north of Philadelphia, so I consider myself a Philly guy. Very blue-collar area. I worked construction from a young age with my dad. I think he took me to work to get me out of my mom's hair. Then over the years, certainly did a lot more. Definitely not a lot of technology. I think probably my exposure was playing a whole lot of video games as a kid. You know, I think it started with Atari 2600 and worked my way through. So yeah, not a very technology-oriented start to my life.
But at the tail end of high school, you're figuring, all right, I need a practical major. So what did that lead you to?
Practical would probably be the right word. You know, I knew that I wanted to only go to school for 4 years, at least at that time, and then wanted to get out to work. I wanted to land a job that paid well. And then she might be a little upset with me for telling this story. But, you know, I had three sisters and there was always a little bit of competitive, but, you know, nice sibling kind of rivalry and stuff. And so my oldest sister actually had started a computer science degree and then decided to pivot away from it. And so I thought, hey, maybe I can do this.
All right. So where do you go to study CS?
I didn't go far. I went to Temple University in Philadelphia. I started that in 1993.
So that would mean you were there in 94 when I was at UMass. And our schools clashed quite a bit on the basketball court. Do you remember the incident there with Chaney and Calipari?
Those were some legendary clashes. That was probably one of the peaks of Temple basketball. So it was an exciting time to be there. I think we lost both games that year. So you might have got us on that one.
We had had like a 10-year losing streak that we finally started to snap in, I think, 93. But yeah, for folks that don't know, after a very narrow loss, I think it was like 56-55, during a press conference, Chaney, who was the coach at Temple, threatened to kill Calipari.
He went after him, that's for sure.
So no love lost there. But in the lab, what are you up to there studying computer science?
Yeah, so typical start college. I think my first semester was all core classes. I didn't even actually have a IT class at that time. So I get into kind of my second year. I think my first exposure was an assembly language programming class.
I'm sorry.
You know, it was interesting, but I'll tell you the beginning of that, which is a funny story. So, you know, you have your first assignment. I don't have a computer. So first time going in a lab really in my life. And there's all these computers in the lab and I get in, sit down. I got the first assignment and I literally cannot figure out how to turn the computer on. I got to say, just one of those points. I mean, many, many years later, I still feel that feeling of like, oh, my God. And I had to lean to the person next to me and go, I can't turn this thing on. I mean, I really questioned, was I cut out to do this? But she helped me out. That got me going the right direction.
All right. So you're doing some C and Java and VB after that. You had kind of a formative capstone project as well?
Yeah. I think, you know, you have those classes and you do little pieces of things. And then the capstone project was really a two-semester project that focused on doing a single project that had a back end and a front end. Funny enough, just like my first experience of actually building something that had both of those pieces. And so they did a project on essentially capturing like CDs and music and an inventory of songs and CDs and that kind of thing and being able to categorize them. And so it was fun. I mean, I think it was just truly my first exposure to something that was really end-to-end.
Now, you were not living on campus. You were commuting and working during college. What did you think of that? Would you recommend it to someone today?
I would put that in my top five of do-overs. You know, I worked a lot. I commuted to school. I still lived in Bucks County, Levittown, Pennsylvania. I took the R7 train almost every day. And look, I think if you have the opportunity, you're really missing out on something. I mean, I felt at the time I needed to. I think in hindsight, the school loans, a few more school loans, and just kind of getting that opportunity for those years to really immerse yourself is something that shouldn't be missed.
And so going into Philly a lot, you said that you figured out neither Geno's nor Pat's were the place to go for the best cheesesteak. Where is it?
I think most people that grow up in or around Philadelphia will tell you about kind of a local mom and pop pizza shop or something like that. For us, it was V&S Pizza in Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania. Phenomenal pizza, great cheesesteak. It's probably not a big secret to people around that area, but certainly from outside that area. So if you ever get there, I encourage you to check it out.
I'm in. So what's your first job like out of college?
So I have this degree and I'm looking at different opportunities. I had an offer from Lockheed Martin. Probably a low-level security clearance where they at least called and asked some of my relatives and friends who I was. I had, ironically, an assembly language programming offer from a company called Shared Medical Systems. That one was really appealing because it was a few thousand dollars more. And at that time, that was a fairly significant amount. And then the last one was an offer from a company called First Consulting Group and an opportunity to go into consulting in the life sciences. I was walking around a career fair. I had bought my first suit, was kind of dressed in that suit, walking around, and an arm reached out and just literally grabs me. Somebody goes, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And I don't know if I looked the right part or what it was, but it was kind of my intro to that company, boutique consulting firm. You know, after some discussions, that was ultimately where I made my decision to start my career.
You look pretty sharp. You're willing to wear a suit and go out in public. And if you have any sort of technical acumen, we want you in consulting.
It's a good place to start because you get to experience some variety. They started me in an 8-week program where they basically taught us to be consultants. I think that started with a blend of tech, how to dress, professional etiquette, doing presentations. It was a nice way to transition from school kind of into the professional world before starting at your first client.
So you're working with document management systems there?
Yeah. Documentum, the majority of their business was built on that platform and that industry, a very highly regulated space. So a lot of requirements around how you manage information and documentation around clinical trials or regulatory documentation or those kind of things. And so First Consulting Group really specialized in this space around kind of building on top extensions, taxonomy, how to make it easy to find things. It was a fun opportunity. I mean, it got me into a lot of great companies.
You must have done some consulting around Y2K.
I literally got to spend the Y2K transition. I think I should have been partying, but I was in an office for Hoffman LaRoche in New Jersey, watching the clock tick along and the work we'd done to really prepare and make sure everything was going to work. And it was, happy to say, a very uneventful Y2K for me.
Your last client there was Amgen. Does that lead to your next opportunity?
Yeah, it does. I was in my mid-20s, and I really wanted to just do something different. And there was an opportunity or project coming up with Amgen, who's out in Thousand Oaks, California. I lobbied really hard to get on that project, you know, as kind of a documentum architect. Luckily enough, I got the opportunity. And in 2001, I made my way out to California on a project for Amgen. I spent about a year consulting with them at the end of my time at First Consulting Group. And I just loved it out there. I thought it was a great company and they had offered a full-time opportunity. And so I made that transition.
Now, I have some guesses, but you say that fermentation seminars helped seal the deal. What are those?
What a great place. I mean, you know, we were out there as a team and kind of tucked away in a corner office. I mean, Amgen, the largest biotech company in the world, it was an amazing place and it had experienced some incredible growth, but still had a small company culture and feel. And so Fridays throughout the summer, they would throw essentially a get together in the afternoon. They called them fermentation seminars, but it was essentially just great get-togethers on a Friday afternoon and just one of the ways that showed kind of that company's culture and DNA and fun.
Now, you got into doing some operational aspects there as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, I continued a lot of architecture and engineering work, certainly got to lead bigger teams. But one of the things in the consulting world that kind of happens, especially when you're on the build side, is as the time your work gets done and things are tested and they're working well and that kind of thing, you move on to the next thing. And you don't get that opportunity to really stick around. And so that was really my first step in the career where you had to stick around and see the product of the work you were doing and actually make sure it landed and was used and met its intended results. And so, you know, and then the other side, when things break, I mean, it's an important part of technology is like how we deliver service day to day.
So you're doing more like document management and portal type stuff there?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of foundation on Documentum, still a lot of regulatory and clinical documentation, but we also started to branch out and do a lot around collaboration, SharePoint portals, you know, so a lot around information management, making it easier for people to collaborate. I mean, it's the biggest products in this space is documentation. I mean, you think about, you have to submit a new NDA or those kind of things. Historically, these were trucks of paper going out to the local regulatory agency or out to their offices and that kind of thing. So when you talk about a world like Amgen, where you had, you know, billion-dollar products and products patent life is driven off kind of when they're first filed, the importance of getting them registered in a timely manner is really important. So co-authoring back in that day was a big piece, like how do we work together? How do we collaborate? How do we review? You know, and those kind of things. We spent a lot of time on those kind of things. And it blows my mind today when you get to go into like a OneDrive or a Google Docs and you can just see like 10 people in there writing at the same time and just how easy that works. Cause in those days, it was not that easy.
Hey, Steve, I see you got something open on the shared drive and I'm trying to edit it and I can't open it. Can you please close it? Oh, whoops. Steve is on vacation. Now we're really hosed.
You've lived through some of that too then.
I remember those days.
Getting called, the calls would always be funny. Hey, can you unlock this? Somebody has it locked. I mean, it was like you'd get called at home to do those kind of things. It was crazy.
You are listening to the Underserved Podcast. Underserved is produced by Maris Consulting Group, embracing the power of people in technology. For more information, visit mariscg.com. That's mariscg.com.
So is that where you met Gary Charbonneau?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, these stories are great. I mean, I've heard some of your other ones of just how you meet people and they influence your life. And Gary was one of those people for me, for sure. He worked in regulatory affairs. I worked kind of close to him on some things, but not super close. And he had left Amgen and he had gone to a company called Baxter. And one day my phone rings and it's Gary. And, you know, he kind of goes, hey, I need you to come here and work for me. I moved over to Baxter. You know, we really need what you do over here. And I remember kind of going like, you're the right person. Like, we haven't worked that close. I mean, I know who you are and you know who I am and that kind of thing. Kind of one of those lessons of like, maybe not thinking people are watching, they're watching. And, you know, these kind of things can open up opportunities.
So you go over there, you're kind of like, you know, focused on technology and building stuff, but now you kind of get a dose of the business side as well, right?
Yeah, it was certainly an opportunity to do it from the other side. I mean, I worked in regulatory affairs. I think a couple of lessons you kind of learn in that process is a lot can go wrong from requirements, because now I was more on the requirements side to what the actual product comes out as. And then I think the other big lesson I really learned there was just how important change management was. I think up to that point in my life, I kind of felt like, hey, you build the best technology, that'll solve a lot of things. You build it and do it in an intuitive way. And I think the importance of just managing change and change on things that may have ran a certain way for people for 30 years in their career is really a big aspect of what we do. And I think that's just served me well throughout my career.
With the regulatory stuff, like you're literally filling up trucks with paper submissions that get driven to the FDA?
That was the case. Two big things. I was at Baxter for maybe a little over a year. I think two big things we really accomplished there. One was the FDA, specifically the US, even though we had supported global, was going through a transition to accept digital submissions. At the time, that was on CDs. And so we really helped the organization with that transition. It's very specific, the format and the structure and the breakdown of the individual documents and taxonomy and that kind of thing. So we were able to submit the first submission in an electronic fashion for Baxter during my time there. So that was a very exciting transition on something that had worked a different way for decades and decades. And the other piece was Baxter was a company started in the 1930s, I believe. And so there was a lot of legacy paper. There were archives all around the world, you know, for the FDA and other regulatory authorities. And so huge project and initiative to capture all that paper, bring metadata and structure to that, and also like OCR so that it was searchable and easily accessible. And so those were probably kind of the two big initiatives during my time there.
But it's too bad. You kind of lose that satisfying thunk factor of dropping gigantic documents onto a desk.
I mean, maybe, but like it's probably, man, until now, it's probably the last time I thought about the sensitivity of onion skin paper and digitizing that and not ripping it in the process. And so I'm a lot happier where we are at today.
Now, does Gary Charbonneau move on and give you another call?
I mean, he does. And this one obviously is a little more like, I kind of know he's going before he goes and says, hey, I'm going to be calling you when I get there. But, you know, he made the transition from Baxter to a company called Allergan a couple months after. I think he was already looking at how he could get me down there to help out. Again, going through a pretty significant transformation of kind of the regulatory affairs department and how they service these things. Yeah, it was a great opportunity to get pulled down and work with someone familiar.
Now, this is more like regulatory and safety type stuff.
It's certainly similar work. We helped do the first electronic submission there. I think one of the exciting things that happened in that time frame in that space, though, was the shift from CD to the FDA having a portal for submission. So I remember our first portal-based electronic submission to the FDA and watching the screen spin as we did that submission and the excitement of the people all around, kind of a single computer as we kind of made that submission. It was an amazing transition.
The big huddle cheers once the final upload goes through.
Yeah.
So then Gary says to them, hey, there's a senior director position open. You're crazy if you don't take Steve. What's that like?
Yeah, it was a time of transition for Allergan. They were getting a new CIO had just come in, Sujean Lin. Not your traditional CIO path. She came out of the finance world. She was right before this role, a regional controller for Asia Pacific. She had been part of a big SAP implementation. So she kind of sat in that between her, but more on the finance side. But I mean, I guess say Gary said that, but he didn't say it to me. And so it was weird. One day interviews just started popping up on my calendar. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. You know, there's these interviews for a role in technology. And so I did come to find out he had said those things and put my name in. I guess it was interesting. I mean, I never actually applied for the job there. So I guess if within a company, you can get opportunities without actually formally putting your name in the hat. It was an interesting time for me because I had, you know, working in kind of more the regulatory operational side of things, I was like at this inflection point of, do I go back to school? Do I go deeper in the science-based side of this business? Or do I go back to technology? And I think, you know, my passion really is that intersection of technology and business and disruption and the opportunity that can bring. And so it was a good opportunity, you know, in an interesting way how it came about, but it was a good beginning in the tech org at Allergan.
So you get a reputation as the fix-it guy. You could take something broken and make sense of it. What sort of things are you unbreaking?
I probably touched nearly every function in that business. You know, a unique ability to go in and look at something and think about the people, the processes, the relationships with other parts of the business and the technology and bring them all together. So I did get kind of flip around and then become a partner to the regulatory and the R&D space, you know, but over time got to work in manufacturing, corporate, commercial, G&A, and all sorts of parts of that business. The big takeaways there was the opportunity working with Sujean to really understand the importance of following the money, managing financials, building amazing business cases that return to business and how you sell initiatives and opportunities, you know, allocations and, you know, your big financial aspects of a business and how they are allocated to other parts of the business and make sure that usage of technology is understood and impact. So that was an interesting part in my time there.
You mentioned you thought about going back to school and that you talked to Sujean and said, should I? And she said, absolutely, you're going. What'd you do there?
Now I'm in the technology space and I was thinking about going back and doing an MBA. I was in my mid-30s. I was kind of questioning, will this return for me? I had two young kids at the time, so I wasn't really sure I wanted. But I remember walking into a one-on-one and saying to her, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And I mean, her basically response was like, and she had a way about her, and like, you're going. And it meant you're going. And I love that about her. I think it was just the right nudge. It was the right thing. And so I had applied to a couple places, but over the next 2 years, had done my MBA at USC Marshall.
And was it useful? Do you wish you'd done it sooner? What'd you think about it?
mean, I definitely wish I'd done it sooner because there were aspects, you know, at the time, I think I was like at a VP level. So there are aspects of like what you learn in that you're already doing. So it would have been great to have got to learn some of that in a educational setting and then put it to work. But it was phenomenal. If you're in Southern California, the Trojan Network, the people, it's just, it's absolutely amazing. You know, you're wearing a shirt, you're walking through a store and they, you know, people are going fight on and like everything. And so, and I learned a lot. I think it was a very helpful time for me. I remember at the time, I also, you know, always had this vision of like, not at Allergan, but if I ever went to the next job, like what's that introduction to that job look like and that pedigree? And, you know, I had so many people on my teams that had gone through post-secondary education, getting MBAs, that kind of thing. And I think there's a certain credibility factor that it gave me the confidence that I'd done that when so many others had.
So fun fact, one of Allergan's most famous products was Botox, but they were also a little bit infamous too. What were some of the stories that happened later on there?
Yeah, Botox was probably a flagship product, but they had quite a portfolio of products in the medical aesthetics, dermatology, eye care was really the roots of the company. I mean, it was a phenomenal company. It was the largest public company in Orange County, California. You know, one day you wake up and, you know, we're being pursued as essentially a hostile takeover by an activist investor that had paired up with another company. You know, I'm kind of a business geek. This stuff was pretty interesting to go through, but pretty scary to go through at the time. At that time, there was a fair amount of foreign headquartered companies buying U.S. companies and inverting them for the tax advantage status. There's actually a very interesting Netflix documentary called Dirty Money, and one of their episodes is on the Allergan story. So it's definitely worth a watch. And we fended off that hostile takeover, but we were in play at that point. And so, you know, they were able to drive tremendous shareholder value as you had companies kind of pursuing Allergan as an acquisition. But ultimately, we sold to essentially what they call a white knight. So a company comes in and helps. And that's a company called Activists that acquired Allergan. And then they had actually ultimately changed the name to Allergan. I think there was more brand recognition that. So Allergan persisted, but it definitely very different in a combined company.
Syrinx has spent a lot of time and effort over the past 25 years building our reputation for quality and our brand. There was one big problem, though. No one could pronounce our name correctly.
Person on the street, brand testing, take one. Hi, can you pronounce the name of this company?
Syrinx?
That's a really good guess.
Really?
Now, how would you pronounce the name of this company?
Syrinx?
Not even close. Can you pronounce the name of this company?
Syrinx.
Luckily for us, Syrinx was acquired in 2022 by the DeWinter Group. We're rebranding Syrinx under DeWinter's highly regarded technology consulting arm, Maris Consulting Group. We bring Syrinx's deep technology delivery experience, and they bring broader delivery capabilities and a new identity as Maris.
Here's what you can count on from the unified Maris. We are now a nationwide powerhouse when it comes to technology consulting, from DevOps to developers, to project managers, to business systems.
So join me in welcoming our future as Maris. Hopefully people will have an easier time pronouncing this one.
How would you pronounce the name of this company?
Maris.
How would you pronounce the name of this company?
Maurice.
Is that your uncle's name? Can you pronounce the name of this company?
Mars.
That's a planet.
Maybe not.
So contact Maris today, and we'll help you get your project done on time and on budget. You can call us at 408-297-7500, or you can find us on the web at mariscg.com. That's MARISCG.com. So a lot of times after acquisitions, you got to figure out, what am I going to do? What are my folks going to do? How does that play out?
I would say, look, for all intents and purposes, my career path plan was stay there, and certainly felt like I was in the position to get the lead technology role. I know Sujin didn't have plans to do that forever. And so, you know, that was the best laid plans that sometimes get changed very quickly. And so what you got to do is then turn that into opportunities. I let them know my intent not to stay. It was part of kind of what was put in place with fending off the acquisition, is with job changes, we would have choices to stay. And, they did a very nice severance packages and those kind of things. I did stay around about 6 months to help make sure people landed well and in good positions and just make sure that the integration of the two companies went well. But it was an interesting time, right? For the first time, you heard the story. In my career, since coming out of college, I literally didn't know what I was going to do next.
And so what do you do next?
One, I'll say these times are interesting times if you ever end up. Like, literally, it was my choice to exit that company, and I was ready for kind of another adventure. But I will tell you that in between time, if it ever happens, it can mess with your mind a little bit. You have these feelings of, hey, I was really great, but like, was it here? Was it the situation here? Like that kind of thing. I do recall during this time, I did hire an executive coach out of my own pocket. And I think that was a great thing to do. I think it helped keep me grounded. It helped me set up my profile. I think that person probably acted a little bit as a therapist during that time too, and just helped me keep my mind straight as I was looking at different opportunities. And so I was pursuing a number of different things. I knew I kind of wanted to do something different. I was ready to kind of be out of at least the pharma biotech space. And I got introduced to Taco Bell through a friend at a consulting company that we'd done work with at Allergan and I'd met down here. Taco Bell happened to also be in Irvine, California, the same city where Allergan was. And so I got introduced through this individual who said they were doing some work at Taco Bell and Taco Bell needed some help. So that was kind of my first entry into Taco Bell.
Yeah, but it's certainly not the last. You end up interviewing quite a bit there before everyone pulls the trigger, right?
It's kind of interesting how you connected like that. So, I go in and I had a couple discussions. I think at the time it was with the CFO of Taco Bell and then the CIO in day one, and ended up having 6 visits in total to Taco Bell. I think it was 4 until I got the courage of say, hey, is this actually a job or what's going on here? Because I'd never seen a job description and that kind of thing. And I think, they were, feeling out some areas they needed help and what was the right thing to do. And also kind of talking to some people and some profiles. So, it did ultimately turn into a job. I think it was really good for me because it gave me some time to reflect on what I wanted to do next. And getting to visit a place 6 different times, you get a good feel for it. You walk through, you see the way people are interacting with people. You see how people talk about the organization. You get real time to step away and think about the questions you want to ask to the next people. And I think there was definitely a theme that was here that was just like, this is a great, amazing brand. It had a great, amazing culture. You could see how people interacted. You could see that the office looked fun. And so it was a good opportunity in the middle of a very big transition for me. Ultimately, funny how these things also work out. I end up with 2 offers. So I was looking at some other opportunities and I end up with one that was for a CIO role, which I was really like, hey, I'm ready to take that next step. I should be taking that next step. So a CIO role in a hospital network in the area. And the second was for senior director role at Taco Bell. And so my wife was very helpful in this one. I think we talked a lot about it. And I felt like there was something special and unique about Taco Bell and its fit for me. And so I just remember going to her like, I shouldn't take this job. It's a step backwards in title, a step backwards in money. It's a much, much, much smaller team. I went from a team of hundreds at Allergan to a total of 3 reports in my first role at Taco Bell. But I remember saying to her like, look, I think we've worked really hard and we can take this risk. And she was very supportive of that. So ultimately, I took the role at Taco Bell.
Well, as fellow underserved guest Chris Sullivan once said, sometimes you got to step down to step up. Or cross industries or verticals, and huge organization. They have what, over 7,000 restaurants just in the U.S.?
7,000 restaurants in the U.S., over 1,000 internationally. It's a big business. We're part of Yum Brands. So it's KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, and Habit Burger. The great thing about being part of Yum Brands and that I love about the brand here in the tech role is that we really get to focus on both the team members, the restaurants, and then the consumers. So our technology focus is really there. And Yum does a lot of the shared services, ERP for the business, email, laptops, those kind of things. And so I got to do those things when I was at Allergan. I think they're obviously critically important, but my passion's really around that intersection at the front end. And I think Taco Bell really gave me an opportunity to fuel that.
So your software there is kind of like a restaurant management platform, everything from labor to inventory to scheduling and so on?
Yeah, so I started in what's called back of house and working on a, what essentially think about it as an ERP for the restaurant. Schedule labor, inventory, using data to help you understand like what food to prep and how many hours to schedule and when to schedule and those kind of things. I think I was very fortunate to get to start in this area because it really helps you learn the business. And it gave me an opportunity to do that in kind of a one level down chair. You know, my first 2 weeks at Taco Bell, they send you into a restaurant. You work in a restaurant for 2 weeks. I was opening at, you know, 5 a.m. and closing and doing inventory at 2 a.m. Like you go back to kind of those stories earlier about using the technology. I mean, right out of the gate, it was that. I think it was just a great opportunity for me to enter the business and learn it as a starting point in this role.
If I remember correctly, like most of the stores are owned by franchisees, so you have kind of another customer constituency at play?
Yeah, I mean, it's in a franchised world. I mean, we own a lot of restaurants as Taco Bell. We're bigger than the biggest franchisee from a corporate perspective, but even today, we're 95% franchised. And that may be a combination of people that own one or two restaurants or people that own hundreds of restaurants. It's a big shift. I mean, it's a great business model where somebody will bring their capital in and execute the business. So it's a very asset light business in many respects, but you have another stakeholder and you have somebody that's investing in this business and there's a high bar. And I think I've always taken that really seriously. I think one of the things that served me well in the process here is I've always been pretty good at like flipping around and putting myself in another person's perspective. And if you can do that, these are businessmen and women and their goal is to, you know, grow their businesses and make an impact and those kind of things. And so if you're able to do that, it always made a lot of sense to me. And, you know, whether it was the franchisees or their teams underneath or that kind of thing, I think one of the coolest things at Taco Bell is getting to go around and ask people about their Taco Bell stories. You know, this brand's been around 60 years and franchisees, they have amazing stories of how they've built their business and come into their business. So everybody has one. And I think you come out of this world where you're working in pharma biotech. I mean, I worked for companies that stop blindness and that kind of thing. But Taco Bell is a business that does such amazing good in the world. It's very different in how it does it. But when you've got thousands of restaurants and 250,000 team members out in the system, there's an opportunity to do a lot of good in the world.
It's just relatable too. Like your kids know what you do. They understand what Taco Bell is.
It is. That is a cool part of it. I mean, I remember stories of my kids like fractioning in little groups and they would come home and tell like, hey, this group's the Taco Bell group in California. They'd be like, there's other people are the Del Taco group. And like, it was just always funny, but my kids love the brand. I mean, there's always a fight at my house on like, hey, there's new Taco Bell swag coming in. Who gets it? And so definitely learned a lot here about the power of a big consumer brand. I mean, that's one of the biggest assets we have is how we have this brand and we deliver this brand and how it makes people feel.
So we mentioned step down to step up. Well, they pretty quickly realize your value and you go through a promotion from VP eventually to CTO. What's that like?
Yeah, I think 6 months in, I was fortunate, like unexpected. Didn't ask for it, just walked in and one day they expanded my responsibilities. So that was to the VP level where I took over kind of all of restaurant technology. So think about not just the back of house, but point of sale, payment, reoccurring and hiring, training systems for that 250,000 team members. So it was a very quick and it made it very rewarding that I'd made that decision and already they saw that in me. So that was a great reward. And it's fun in a world where, you know, you have these numbers, you know, and its scale is such a powerful thing in this business. And I think that's one of the things I really learned as I turned to that level and then into the CTO role is you're in this world where just penny second steps, they multiply out and they matter in a way that I'll be honest, like it was different than the pharma biotech world. But yeah, around 2017, company was going through a little bit of a transition. We'd been doing really well But we had a change in leadership, and I think it was a great opportunity for me to kind of step into the lead technology role or the CTO role. There was a recognition that tech was going to play a much bigger role in the future of this business. And so there was a commitment to invest in that. And then during that transition, I had the opportunity to join the leadership team. So my predecessor had reported into the CFO, you know, still very critical function, but wasn't part of the leadership team. So it was an interesting time to join. You know, I get to become a head of a function and the first technology member of the executive team here at Taco Bell.
So what sort of things are changing while you're there? Are you kind of figuring out build versus buy? Like,
I mean, the transition to that, because I think that's another scary time. Like, everybody has to go through that first step. Kind of got some of those same feelings as the inability to turn on the computer many, many, many years earlier. Like, I know I can do what I do, but do I belong here? That's an important point on the executive team, because you're part of a completely different team now, finding your voice. And then I think the other thing, you realize you got to set the agenda, you got to drive the agenda, and there's nobody going to check it for you. And so, you know, that transition was definitely a challenging transition, but a very rewarding transition. Again, the benefit of kind of my time in the first role, you know, in the couple years that preceded that, was that this industry and this business and the scale and size of our brand really had this opportunity to build more software and really purpose-built, where you can take advantage of little benefits and they do scale out. And I think if, you know, if we were a couple hundred unit restaurant chain, I don't think we'd take the same approach. Taco Bell's history was essentially, let's find the best product off the shelf, integrate it and implement it. And I think this was really probably my start, was telling them, hey, like, we're going to build for competitive advantage. We're going to build a lot more of our software. We're going to shift the product to agile and invest heavily in data and analytics capabilities in-house. And really, at the end of the day, all of that centers around what our mission is, which is to make it easy. We really have a mission to make it easy for consumers to access the brand. And then, look, it's hard to work in our restaurants, so we never say easy, but easier for our team members to service those consumers.
What would you say you're kind of most proud of in your tenure there?
Getting to be somewhere, I'm over 7 years now. You get to be a part of a lot of big things, so it's hard to pick one. I mean, you know, we brought in delivery, we really put e-commerce on the map, launched the loyalty program. We did some fun stuff that really touches on technology, hitting the experience differently. We did a taco subscription. We're doing voting on comeback products. You know, if you run into people and they want to talk to you about, man, like, you work at Taco Bell, you took this away, you took that away. So we're kind of leaning in on that and having some products where consumers can vote on it and they'll come back for a time. Digitization of the drive-thru is a huge opportunity. I'm a foundation board member, and so we implemented a leading roundup program that's helping do a lot of good in the world around education. And so, yeah, I mean, there's just so much, I think. But at the end of the day, if I step back and go, what did we really do different? And I'm most proud of, it's probably two things. One, it's the team. It's the team we built, the growth opportunities we've given to people, really having technology on the map in the brand, you know, respected by the franchise community, feel like they're getting value out of it. And then two is really the foundation we've established and set up for the future. Because I think as much as the, you know, the last, you know, 5-7 years have been a crazy amount of change, I think the next five we've got coming up are going to be that much more.
You mentioned digitization of not just the drive-thru, but like the app and ordering online. That's taken off hugely in the last few years, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think you talk about those things coming in. I mean, we share last year from a business that was essentially zero when I joined, $3 billion last year. Like, it's fun to be part of that type of transformation. It's also hard. I mean, that's a very different type of order, sometimes much larger orders, a lot more customization. You've often got delivery drivers with respect to the delivery things. So you've got kind of more of a B2B2C model. So it definitely has a lot of impact in the restaurant too. So not without its challenges. You know, you've really been fortunate and enjoyed the opportunity to be part of such a fast transformation in a business that's, you know, again, 60 years old. And you think about, you know, just over a few years, just the explosive transformation that we've seen.
All right. So we pull up to the drive-thru, roll down the window. What are you ordering at Taco Bell?
I love everything, and we get access to some pretty unique things in the test kitchen out here. So you get to try some stuff that never hits the light of day. But probably my go-to, that because I do eat a lot of Taco Bell, is 3 chicken soft fresco tacos with Diablo sauce.
Do you ever miss being hands on keyboard and coding at all?
I do. A day will come where either my kids will be out of the house and I'll have a little more free time versus running around with them. But I am 100% certain that I will end my career or my semi-retirement or that kind of thing coding. I think there's a satisfaction you get out of building. I think to take it all the way back, I always felt like there's a parallel to my dad in construction and the work I did in construction and the way you could go home at the end of the day and see the work you did. You know, often in roles like I'm in today, it'll be a key decision. You may not know for 3 years if that decision was the right decision or the wrong decision. And so I love engineering. I do think at some point I will go back to dabbling in code and maybe doing a little bit of on the side. I don't know if it'll be for nonprofits or some sort of philanthropic endeavor or maybe a little part-time gig on the side.
Now, you mentioned your kids. I imagine when you are away from keyboard, you're running around with them.
You know, I got a freshman in college, so running around a lot less with her. I've got a sophomore in high school, so she is a great scholar athlete. She picked up running track and cross country, and so get to watch her meets. And then I have a 9-year-old boy who is also heavily into sports, and I coached his stuff for quite a few years, but more recently I've kind of stepped away from. I think he's gotten too good at baseball, particularly, for me to keep coaching him. I was having to spend way too many hours on YouTube learning drills and that kind of thing and staying ahead of the boys. So I've now stepped back and I am a spectator now on the side cheering along.
Now, there's something to be said for that too.
Absolutely.
So Steve, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences with the listeners of Underserved.
Thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure to have the opportunity to tell my story a little bit. At Taco Bell, our slogan is Live Mas. So I love what you're doing here with Underserved, and I just tell you to keep living Mas.
Mucho más, por supuesto. And we'll talk to everyone soon on the next episode of Underserved.
Thank you for listening to the Underserved podcast. For more information on the topics discussed and for show notes, visit the show website, underserved.fm. And please be sure to rate, like, and subscribe to Underserved on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.